a record sale and open house.
Wow.
Tour the station.
Cool.
See the studios.
Magical.
Marvel at the music library.
Awesome.
And check out our record sale.
I can buy some of KFAI's music?
Vinyl, CDs, tapes, we've got it all. Your purchase goes right back into keeping KFAI strong and vital.
When is that again?
Saturday, August 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 1808 Riverside Avenue on the west bank of Minneapolis. The KFAI record sale and open house. Food, fun, games, and music. All part of non-commercial, community-powered radio.
This is Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Anthony Galloway, partner at the Dendros Group and pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
I'm Luz Maria Frias. I am happily enjoying life to its fullest.
I'm Halili, owner of The Other Media Group, producer of Counter Stories, and VP of Programming at Ampers.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
So today's episode, we are going to be diving into mental health, in particular from the lens of BIPOC folks. And so we have to bring in somebody who works in that field, and we are pleased to have a special guest with us. I don't know if I should call you doctor or therapist and community of mental health professional, Sister Aisha M. Jenny. Welcome to Counter Stories.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
So before we dive in, if you will just give us a little bit of background about yourself, including the high school you graduated from, just for the audience to hear.
Oh, come on.
First
I mean,
foremost,
Highland
I
in the house, okay? Highland in the house. That's all I gotta say.
I think there's a bad connection. I can't really hear what someone just said, but I don't think it was important. You can probably just cut that part out. I'm from the world famous St. Paul Central, class of 97, one of the best years to ever do it, which of course everyone here is familiar. You know, everyone does know about that. I work as a therapist at a practice that I share with my friend Larissa. It's called Therapies, and we also have a nonprofit called Affinity Healing Collective that we started last year, and we use that nonprofit to help people pay for therapy services, holistic health services. We have equine therapy, which is therapy with horses and in groups, and anything that you can find that's therapeutic where marginalized folks, particularly BIPOC folks, are not really able to get access to these resources or cannot afford them because of systemic racism. And so that's just a couple of things I do. I'm the resident weirdo therapist here. There's probably not a therapeutic technique that I don't do. I also am a nationally certified hypnotherapist as well. So, yeah. And I went to FAMU for undergrad and Seton Hall for grad school.
Well, it's so good to have you with us today. As we kind of wade into the waters, you know, one of the things that comes up for me, especially during holiday seasons or big anniversaries as a pastor, is that I find that calls and need for just time and presence and, it, you know, kind of increases during these times as holidays can bring a whole lot of things up or you know, times where we are supposed to take a break and reconnect with family can bring a whole lot of things up. And so it's good to have you here to talk about some of those things. One of the questions I want to get us started with is just, you know, as a therapist, especially as a BIPOC therapist, I mean, many of us on the call have experienced trying to find therapists of color who match us culturally, in terms of gender and in terms of racial understanding. And that's a process in and of itself. And you just alluded to some systemic pieces like that. And so, you know, what are some of the things that you're seeing, particularly as we come towards the new year, and some things that we should be thinking about and considering, especially for BIPOC folks in our mental health as we get to the new year?
Well, as you mentioned, this is a kind of polarizing season for people. So, I mean, there is no down season for therapists. Let me just say that when people are feeling good, they want to come to therapy and it's like new year, new me. When, you know, kids are wrapping up school and you have where people are doing IEPs for the next year, we're pretty busy. Over the summer, we're pretty busy, but especially when the holiday seasons start for people, that's when you'll start seeing people having a little bit more conflict with family, reevaluating their relationships, reevaluating their career. You know, it's just kind of like the end of the year thing where you're reevaluating your life over the course of the year or over the course of a couple of years. We also see that these are the times where the domestic violence rates are the highest. And it's probably because of people interacting with their families and tensions. For people who celebrate the different holidays this season, are they able to afford it? Are they able to afford to go see their families? So those kinds of issues come up. And then for others, there's an intense feelings of loneliness that are prevalent. And so as people are reflecting, it's cold in Minnesota. If you're in Minnesota, it's, we have less sun and it's colder. And so seasonal depression is also kicking in and kind of in full swing. And so you compound all of that together and you have people really doing their best to try to navigate all of the things that are coming up for them and sometimes falling short of being their best selves or sometimes running into obstacles that are beyond their control. And it becomes very daunting. So yeah, we're really busy right now. And the amount of work that we do around depression and anxiety and processing people's trauma definitely increases as well.
Aisha, you mentioned you're a certified hypnotherapist, and can you help us understand really goes on in hypnotherapy? I think that's an area that many people might be curious about. I'll say for myself, I lost a sister to cancer, brain cancer, earlier this year. And I did see a hypnotherapist, and for me, it was incredibly powerful. And I would not have sought it out on my own without it. But I want you to, from your perspective, really unpack that for us and our listeners to really understand what goes on and the benefits that come with that.
Sure. I'm so sorry for your loss, first of all. I can only imagine how hard that's been for you.
Thank you.
Hypnosis, hypnotherapy in particular, I like to think of it like our natural state is a trance state. And so you have to try hard to focus. So if you think about your natural state being a trance state, what I mean by that is that when you're driving, you're not thinking, okay, pull forward, turn my wheel slightly, okay, watch the road. Your mind is usually somewhere else because your unconscious kicks in and remembers all of the steps of driving. So with hypnosis is about bypassing the forefront of your mind, you know, your cognizant mind, the one that has all these thoughts and all these ideas and is constantly running on a ticker tape, to get to your unconscious, to the part that is the feelings that we have, the silent voices, the things that kind of lead and direct what we're doing. And so when you are practicing hypnosis with someone, you get them to that state where their unconscious mind is driving the car. Their conscious mind is still present. They're like in the passenger seat. So it's not like you're in a state where you can't understand or don't know what's going on, but that conscious mind is not interrupting the work or the process or the thoughts or the feelings or the explorations that the unconscious mind wants to go into. And so with that, you're able to do in a short amount of sessions in hypnosis what it may take you in your conscious mind months, years, decades to do, because you don't have that interruption.
I remember at the beginning of this final push in seminary, I was having a lot of anxiety, a lot of balls in the air and things like that, and was able to get a couple of sessions with a coworker of mine who was a hypnotherapist, and shifting and thinking about those things and some of those patterns was amazing.
And I think it's important for people to know that I eat at the restaurant that I cook at. So anything that I do with my clients, I've had done to me as a client.
I love
that. I don't I don't practice anything I don't believe in. And so I know what it's like to sit in that seat.
Oh my gosh, that was exactly what I was going through my mind today. Because like, for me, it's been a really hard week. And I met with my therapist this morning. So like Anthony was saying, it's really hard to find a therapist of color. You know, I didn't find an API therapist. My therapist isn't even in Minnesota. So I see a therapist virtually. So yeah, so my therapist is Ho-Chunk and she lives in Wisconsin. And, you know, it took a long time just to find her. And, you know, so now I love her. But we were just talking, you know, I had my appointment with her this morning and just thinking of like, and I was saying this to the dogs literally before we came on, you guys, was, you know, who's taking care of me? Right. Because I've just been so busy. I've been taking care of everything. We did family photos. My parents went out of town and my grandmother was, as folks who listen know, I you know, care for my grandmother when I care for my grandmother because she only remembers me for the most part. So that was really difficult with my parents gone. And, you know, and then we lost a huge member of our Hmong community this week, Tu Jer Zhang, to a very just strange and terrible way of losing somebody, and just the impact that he had made on the Hmong community, but also just the Minnesota community as a whole, nationally and internationally as well. And so I just feel like, I know, I kind of just felt like, who's taking care of me? And I thought of that today, and I thought of my floppy puppy here in my lap of like the dogs. The dogs are caring for me right now because I'm doing all the Christmas shopping. You know, I have to plan the gatherings for my white in-laws and my husband to get together. Like, you know, it's just, it's a lot at this time of year. And it's a lot.
It seems like a lot because it is a lot. And we talk about like the invisible work that people do. And oftentimes, especially with women of color that I work with, there is an invisible work that we do that people just discount. But if we stopped doing it, if you're like, hey, how come the holidays didn't magically happen? Who's taking care of grandma? Who's reminding people of their birthdays? And we don't think about it, but it takes a toll. In my office, I have Audre Lorde's quote hanging up that says, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it's self-preservation, and that's an act of political warfare. And I make every single person of color who comes into my office read it, really every client that comes into my office read it, because oftentimes what we view as selfish is really caring for yourself, is really getting you out of survival mode into thriving mode, is healthy boundaries. And because we can become so intertwined with our families and being a good daughter, son, husband, wife, child, sister, brother, or what have you, friend, we forget what we need. We discount what we need. And if we're not caring for each other, if we're not noticing, if we're not pushing to make people take help and take love, then we just go without, and we may not realize it until we're really, really deep in the throes of it. And that's, I typically see that people realize it years after it first started. And so that's a lot of the work that I do with people is around that, and around caring for yourself. And what does it really look like to care for yourself? I'm not talking about hot bubble baths, although that can feel caring, but maybe caring for myself means saying no to someone that I love, and trusting that our relationship won't fall apart if I'm not able to do everything for everybody at every moment.
What are some things in ourselves that we can often look at and go, and maybe need to stop and go, I wonder if there is something that I'm not, maybe I'm decontextualizing something, a sign for my own self. One example, I'll start since I'm putting you on the spot. One example that I came about is, It used to be that I would feel the pressure of a deadline, and that would spark something in my brain to like really get creative. And I would tell myself that until working with my therapist over time, they're like, so can you only produce, I would say things like this. I would say things like this. I only get good grades on papers that I write in the last 24 hours or the last 36 hours. And without that pressure, when I've tried to take time and preparation and all of that, I've gotten, it's been all right, right? And it took somebody outside of me going, okay, so you're characterizing that as needing the pressure. What if we went into the other direction and said, what can we make about the practice of prior preparation for you to make your outcomes better? Like, can we have that conversation? And I had written into my brain that the pressure is required, which makes you stay up all night, not get sleep, all these unhealthy outcomes, versus what is it about the preparation that doesn't get me into the thinking that I do when there's pressure? Like, I didn't even think that was possible, right? So that was somebody like relating and recounting to me, like there's another way of thinking about that, right? And procrastination can be, you know, chronic procrastination can be a sign that something else is happening. Are there other things that folks can generally be thinking about that we, that could be markers for us to do something different that you've encountered and seen?
Oh, for sure. If I'm going to do a blanket generalization, I would just say that BIPOC folks are superhumanly good at working in the midst of trauma and tragedy. So this is a skill that we, had to hone, you know, we did not want to learn the skill. We did not want to be resilient. We did not want to be, you know, to have to adapt and to move through the greatest pains that the world has ever faced. But because we had so many centuries of experience with it, we have gotten good at it. That is why you are able to say, I work my best under the deadline. No, what you do is you work abnormally well under a deadline, more so than what other people are able to do, because you are used to doing that. You work better when you have time and thought, and you can give it the care that it needs. But when do we ever have time to think and give things the care that it needs? There's always something that we're using that's press up against a deadline, or press up against a trauma, press up against a tragedy, press up against some kind of action where we had to educate for ourselves or for other groups of people. We never get rest. So how we know how well we do with rest if we never get it?
Wow. You just blew my mind with that one. I'm sorry. You got all up in my business on that one.
I mean, it's insanely true.
It's like I'm getting ready to write a check to pay, you know, to pay for this session. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, I'm retired. And so I don't have the pressure of work. You know, now I never thought of myself as a thoughtful person, but I overthink. I know I overthink. All right. I mean, it's just, but part of that then is, you know, with the thoughts that I have all day long, sometimes I consciously am trying to change what those thoughts are. And, but I think part of what I'm been going through, and I've mentioned it here on Counter Stories, I've mentioned it for the past 3-4 years since COVID hit. That, you know, was perfectly timed almost with my retirement. And then with the my knees getting so bad that I no longer can do the two things that I looked forward to do during my retirement. Mm-hmm. Well, two things that I wanted to do more of. Let me put it like that, because there are many things I wanted to do. I wanted to travel, do this, that, and the other. But golf and fish. And those are two things that are extremely hard for me to do now because of my knees.
Just like my dad.
Exactly. I mean, you know, because when I last was playing with your dad, he was going through the same thing. My knees have been bad, but they weren't at that point yet. And so for me, I've been going through this kind of drawn out grief process, because I'm not able to enjoy my retirement the way that I thought I wanted to. And, you know, a month and a half ago, I actually sold my boat. You know, so that that was a big thing. That was a really big thing for me to do, was to sell that boat. And but so there's this. And then the other thing for me is I sit here and I've been sober now 33 years.
Congratulations.
So, oh, thank you very much. And I kid you not, there are programs that I watch on TV, movies or whatever, and things happen, interactions happen between individuals in that show or movie, and I feel these emotions welling up inside of me that bring tears to my eyes. And so I've been trying to talk to my mate about that, to help her, or to have her help me identify what those emotions are. Because I stunted that for so long with my alcohol and drug use. And I started at such a young age that I never really, I mean, I have a hard time identifying other than anger. I always could identify anger, or flight or in fight. I mean, you know, those were the things that I identified with most, but now I'm having all these other feelings and I can't tell you what they are. I know what I get this welling inside of me. It brings this feeling. Sometimes I think it's happiness. Sometimes I think it's, but I'm really not quite sure. And so, so for me, it's trying to learn how to identify some of these emotions that I'm very unfamiliar with. And then, but allow them to, because I'm feeling things now that I haven't felt my entire life. And it's kind of, and I don't always know what to do with that. So I'm not trying to turn this into a therapy session, but just listening to these discussions, because she was just pointing out all these things, because I worked very well under procrastinating, waiting until that last 24 hours. And then I would get all this stuff done, so I clearly identify with what you were talking about, Anthony. I think, you know, many of us operate like that. So, you know, one of the things that can be pervasive in Indigenous communities is shaming. I'm part of that generation whose mother was sent to boarding school, who did not learn a lot of the, I guess, caring and loving ways of being raised in family, because she spent a lot of time in that boarding school. And so that, and then I have, my father was Black, and so he was denied all kinds of things, being a Black man during World War II and subsequent years thereafter. And so, you know, I think the end result is that sometimes we grow up where we do have a mother and father, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we've been able to experience love or, you know, things like that in a way that we may see other families or other folks. You know what I'm trying to get at? And so, and then it becomes generational. Unless a generation can break that, right? So,
and I would say, because we use that word break, I would reframe it to like, unless that generation can unlock it, because although it may not have been a showing of love in a way that was connected to emotions, every time I, you know, bake bread for you, and I take that time and that energy and those hours to bake that bread, I'm pouring all the love that I can't say into this bread for you. I want you to think of your feelings as notifications. You don't always have to understand where the notification comes from or what it means, but you just receive it. received the notification, some of the tears, some of the grief, some of the heaviness that you feel is you mourning for people that you loved who couldn't do that for themselves. Mm. We carry these weights of a generations of the people that we saw growing up, of society that, yeah, sometimes we weep. Sometimes we feel heaviness. It's because we're used to feeling and being in touch with the world, the earth, everyone there in it, and it's overwhelming. Spiritually speaking, emotionally speaking, physically speaking, mental health speaking, in all the ways. This is why we're not good at retirement. We're terrible.
Okay, I need to record this and play this for a couple of folks in my family who will not sat their behind down. I am so thankful for you to joining us. And I have to do this just because if we're going to be honest about what's coming up for us, let's go ahead and be honest about it. We lost somebody huge in our community. I remember being at Ben Mays and being a kid in the little courtyard with the carpeted space and having a Hmong brother in Hmong dress come forward and have me chanting, "Go Hmong boy, go Hmong boy, go," as he taught us how to say his name. And then he paused and let all the kids of color off the hook while he said, "Now, kids of color, I know you already know how to say it. You've been saying it right." And then turned to the white kids and said, "Okay, now white kids, here's how you do it." And it was the first time I saw myself as an asset. I can honestly say that Brother Thu Jer Zong is the reason, is one of the many people who told me it was, who made me believe it was possible to be a storyteller, to understand that storytelling is not only keeping of the culture, but it's also a way for you to be able to be. It was after seeing Thu Jer Zong do that storytelling that I got involved in storytelling with the Arts Us organization and many others. I can honestly say he's part of my origin story to even becoming a pastor in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, to have somebody in our community. And that's just me, and I'm not in the Hmong community. And so I want to make sure that we don't let this time go without honoring somebody who's been so much a part of all of our lives, who has died in such a tragic and strange way, that all of us are left feeling a whole lot of different things. And we're going to be pouring out all those feelings and telling those stories. But as the family and the community prepare to deal with his soul in the way that is culturally appropriate for that community, let us just take a moment to say we have loved you, and we keep on loving you, and thank you for what you've given to us, Brother Thu Jer Zong. Go Hmong boy, go. We send you off and to be and connect with the ancestors.
Thank you so much for that, Anthony. Thank you so much. That was beautiful. Yeah. And I've not been able to put words together, so thank you for that.
Oh, I'll take that breath and let them tears flow, because those tears are medicine, as our Indigenous brothers and sisters tell us. This has been an episode of Counter Stories as we close out our year. I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, partner at the Dendros Group and pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
I'm Luz Maria Frias. Took an early retirement, and like Aisha has so wisely said, figuring it out and enjoy life and living life in the moment.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
And I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers and Counter Stories producer.
And our special guest,
Aisha Mjani, Therapies, Counseling Services, and Affinity Healing Collective nonprofit.
Take care of yourself. It's not self-indulgence, it's self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. Audre Lorde. This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
You're listening to KFAI Radio, Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial, community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Programming KFAI is made possible in part through grants in the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. We're starting a about a minute early today. It's 1:59, la 1 con 59 minutos.